Okay, as of this time, we call to order the public meeting of the governing board of the Cochise County Community College District. If you would, please, let's join Trustee Meter in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
and thank you all for joining us this afternoon. 1.03 is adoption of tonight's agenda. Dr. Perry, does the agenda stand as published?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38-431.02, the agenda has been properly noticed and posted. There are no requested modifications at this time. The board may take action.
Well, I need a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 1.04 is the citizens in-person interim. Ms. Wheeler, do we have anybody signed up for this?
I've had no request to address the board today.
Very well. Thank you, ma'am. 1.05, standing reports. Yeah, 1.05.1 was represented to the Arizona Association of Community College Trustees, which is the AACCT. We will not have a report. There's been nothing new since the last meeting. 1.05.2 was a Senate report. That was written in our packet. Was there any comments or questions on that report? 1.05.03, dang it, they're not here. It was a Student Government Association report that was also in our packet. Was there any questions or comments on that report? Kind of missing. 1.05.4, College President's Report. Dr. Curry?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. First of all, I'd like to congratulate the Cochise College men's basketball team on an outstanding season. The Apaches finished this year as a Region 1 champs and battled to the final seconds in overtime, in the West District Championship, falling in a hard-fought game to a nationally ranked College of Southern Idaho. In fact, I think they're headed into the tournament as the number one seed for the tournament. Just like to thank Coach Jerry Carrillo, Coach Lane, Coach Matthews, and our student athletes for an exciting season and representing Cochise College both well, both on and off the court. We're extremely proud of them. I'd also like to just mention that our Cochise College Apache baseball team is ranked number 17 and moves into first place in the Arizona Community College Athletic Conference Division I standing. So if you haven't had a chance to see them play, it is an offensive circus, you might say. Their bats are just really, really heavy right now with run after run after run. So they're doing extremely well. As we move into March, spring semester, it's well underway. We've reached the midpoint in the semester, so we've started the second 8 weeks courses, as well as in kind of full rhythm and academic cycle for our 16-week courses. Of course, March also brings what we refer to as March Madness, right? So many of you, even myself, will be filling out your brackets trying to decide what to do, who's going to go where. And I think the pace of activity is kind of the same across the college, kind of here. It's a busy stretch where preparation, hard work, and staying focused on fundamentals really matter. And I think it's one of those things that both our faculty and our staff continue to do. They do well. That makes this college such a great place to work. And with St. Patrick's Day upon us, it's also a reminder that with a little bit of luck, never hurts. The success we see across the college is driven, again, by consistent effort and a commitment to what we do in our mission. So thank you to everybody that is involved in that. Legislative update. On the state level, the Arizona legislature is in its final kind of phase of committee work. So this is, they have one more week next week where bills can pass through committee. After that, lawmakers should be shifting their focus to negotiating the 2027 state budget. which of course must be approved or should be approved by July 1, 2026. As I've mentioned before, Republicans maintain the majority in both chambers while you've got a Democratic governor. I've also mentioned that the governor has dropped her budget already. And being as there is kind of this divide, it makes for an interesting time when budget negotiations are gonna happen. I think one of the biggest or notable divides is really on where the governor sits and where the legislature sits on federal tax conformity and the impacts that that will have on the overall state budget. There are also a number of bills currently under consideration that we're actively tracking. They have the potential impact not only higher education, workforce development, and governance structures for community colleges as well. And I've left provided you on the dais just a list of those bills that we are tracking right now. We suspect that some of them will be vetoed by the governor. We'll just keep you abreast on what happens there as we move forward. And if we have to, if things do get passed, we'll let you know how we're going to conform to those. So any questions on the state level legislative update? At the federal level, Congress continues to work through the budget policy decisions that will impact higher education, particularly federal grant programming, which remains the primary source of need-based aid for community college students. Current projections indicate that the program is facing a shortfall of approximately $5 to $6 billion this year, and is growing and could grow to more than $11 billion by 2027 without additional funding. This is being driven by increased student participation in the federal Pell program and upcoming policy changes, including the expansion of Workforce Pell, which will begin in July of 2026. Congress recently approved supplemental funding to stabilize the program in the short term. However, this does not address the long-term imbalance, and policymakers are now considering options such as adjustments to the award levels and eligibility, which I think could be a real detriment to our students here at the community colleges. So we're drafting some letters right now to reach out to our congressional delegation just in support of making sure that Pell is funded at a suitable level, as well as not adjustments to any award levels or eligibility. Also, earlier this week, the U.S. Department of Education, in partnership with the U.S. Department of Labor, issued a Dear Colleague letter outlining a new interagency initiative to better align post-secondary education with workforce development. And we're seeing a lot of this happen now, taking things that were primarily in the realm of the Department of Education and moving that over to the Department of Labor. At the federal level, what they're saying is this partnership is designed to strengthen the connection between educational programs and workforce needs, particularly in high-demand fields and short-term training pathways. For institutions like us, we're already trying to align ourselves for those things that are happening in regards to that. So I feel that we're in a good position as they move over that delegation of responsibilities. From the operational standpoint, they're also saying that new federal grants awarded beginning in fiscal year 2026 will transition to a new grant management system, while existing grants will remain unchanged. This may require some internal adjustments. We'll have to see as we do an assessment on what we've got that will be new for 2026, although I think most of our current grants have already been reallocated and will remain in the old system. Overall, I think the initiative signals that there's a continued effort by the federal government really to emphasize workforce outcomes and may even create additional opportunities for community colleges like us that are really doubling down on that workforce and what we can do. So we'll continue to keep the board and the college abreast and monitor those developments as needed. From a facilities update, we continue to work with the Gordian Group on the Facility Condition Index. We anticipate receiving that report hopefully by the end of March, which will kind of guide our next phase of the project. And this will lead heavily into our strategic planning process as well as we look at a master facilities plan. Renovations to the Douglas Campus 400 building are progressing well. The roofing portion of the project is scheduled to begin March 16th this week, with interior build-out planned for April. The project is currently on track, and we're hoping that it will be completed by May. Stormwater drainage improvements around that area as well in the Douglas Campus Library are nearing completion, are expected to be finished by the end of this month. So if you're on campus, walk by there. There's a really nice entranceway into that library, that side of the library now. And it looks like they've really got that drainage set to go into those major thoroughways for the water and then out into the grassy areas as well. So that'll be great. Arizona at Work, if you didn't know this, Arizona at Work leases space from us down at the downtown center. We have worked with them to reduce their leased space down at the downtown center, and they're going to be returning a three office suite to the college. So we're beginning to prepare the space for internal use by faculty and staff. A dividing wall has been installed, and technology services is relocating the network ports to the college servers. We don't know exactly what will go in there right now, but that gives us an increased capacity for current needs or even future needs. At the Sierra Vista Campus Services Building, an additional office and workroom are being added to the existing footprint. This space will be used by the director of facilities, and the director's current office will be reassigned. That's the one here in this building, will be reassigned to the new chief information officer position once that is filled. Shifting now, I'd like to share just a few updates that I think demonstrate how Cochise College continues to meet its mission. It's that time of year again. Our CTE areas are starting their industry advisory board meetings, and it's an opportunity for that connection between business and industry and what we do from an educational standpoint to really come together as they review facilities, curriculum, talk about our students, placement of students, and what we can do better. Our cybersecurity program has submitted its annual report to maintain its designation as a National Center of Excellence through National Security Agency. And we've got the Cybersecurity President's Cup competition coming up here April 18th. I think I've mentioned before that we've started this partnership with SpaceX. They really liked a couple of our welding students. That continues to grow. With six additional Cochise College welding students entering the company's employment training pipeline, bringing the total to 10 students. SpaceX has also expressed an interest in visiting campus and tour our welding facility. So kudos to the welding instructors, to Dean Molina, and all the work that they're doing there. Also, our welding students recently competed at the Skills USA regional competition at Pima College, where they had a first place finish and a third place finish. Lastly, in that area, the Stephanie Brown Memorial Welding Scholarship event that was held on March 7th to provide scholarships to welding students was a huge success, raising more than $15,000 for student scholarships with strong support throughout and across the county. Workforce development and community lifelong learning continue to hit the ground running with contract training opportunities throughout March, with the basic Lifesaver and HeartSaver courses serving over 50 participants. Additionally, we're launching training includes fall prevention training for Douglas City employees, as well as OSHA 30 training for the City of Benson employees as well. And then they're also launching two new eight-week programs supporting Fort Huachuca community, which will be a project management professional training on post and a Security Plus certification training at the downtown center. They're also looking at launching adult education English for speaker and other language classes, which will soon begin at Fort Huachuca Center to support military-connected families. So kudos to Cullen and his team for all they're doing, again, to support those various areas throughout the county. On the healthcare front, Cochise College will host an EMS pediatric training on April 1st at the Downtown Center in partnership with the City of Sierra Vista and Canyon Vista Medical Center. This will be EMS providers from across the county, along with our paramedic students and faculty. Additionally, all 10 students in the first 8 weeks of the cohort for the EKG technician program successfully passed their national certification exam. So Beth, you and Melissa and all your allied healthcare directors, thank you for all the work that you're doing. Let's see. So yesterday we received the draft report from the Higher Education Learning Commission accreditation visit to Cochise College. In this draft report, the peer review team concluded that Cochise College meets the accreditation criteria and demonstrates strong alignment with its mission and service to the communities of Cochise County. It is important to note that the report is still in draft form. So we've got about 1 week to get any factual, any mistakes in the report that may be factual back to them for clarification, for updating. And then it will be reviewed, and then it goes to the HLC's Institutional Actions Council before becoming final approval. And we'll get some heads up on when it's going to be listed for that agenda item by the IAC, and we'll be able to monitor that. A couple of things. Across the evaluation, the college was reviewed on 22 sub-criteria, so four main criteria and 22 sub-criteria, with 20 rated as met, and the remaining two noted as met with concerns, reflecting a strong overall performance and solid foundation across the institution. The team highlighted numerous strengths, noting the college's mission is clearly understood, and that's across all demographics of the college, and actively guides operations and describes Cochise College as having a strong culture of integrity and a deep community and deep community engagement. They also recognize student success outcomes here at Cochise College that exceed national benchmarks, along with strong governance, financial stewardship, and meaningful partnerships across the region. The two areas that were identified were in the criteria three, teaching and learning, and they reflect the college's recent implementation. I need to make sure that they understand this. We met the criteria. Met with concerns means they met the criteria. However, what really came down to was within the last couple of years, we have launched new enhanced processes in both program review and assessment. And what the team wanted to see is they wanted to see a little bit longer demonstration of our ability to carry out that process, and then look at those outcomes and what do we do to close that kind of loop of improvement. But they also said that they acknowledge that significant progress is made over the past and strong systems are now in place to support continuous improvement. So what they're asking us to do is in about 4 years, which is kind of our midterm reporting for HLC, is to do a follow-up report on how things have progressed. So they recommended the interim monitor report that'll take place in 2030 to demonstrate full implementation and impacts of those efforts. So overall, I think the report reflects a very positive evaluation of the work that's taking place here at Cochise College. Again, to Dr. Brown, her team, and everybody that was involved, kudos. This is fantastic news. Again, the caveat, it's draft, still has to be approved, but we'll make sure that in the next few months, as we get that fully approved, we'll have Dr. Brown and her team give an overall presentation and kind of outline those two additional areas as well on where we're at, where we're going, so the board is inclined to know what the process is for that monitoring report. Comments, community engagements, February 19th. I attended AC4 meeting, and then myself and Quint Molina met with the superintendent of Wilcox High School. February 20th, myself, Cullen, and Quint Molina met with the Sheriff's Department and the Western Sheriff's Association to talk about hosting their new Sheriff's Academy this summer. It looks like we're on track to do that the week of June 22nd. So we'll keep the board abreast of what's happening there.
That's a regional sheriff?
That's a regional sheriff's training here at Cochise College. So February 20th, I attended the Legacy Foundation event at the Legacy Event Center. It's a fantastic facility. They've said that we are one of those that they would welcome to use at our discretion. And we're looking for a strong partnership between that we've always had with the Legacy Foundation, but to continue to build those partnerships as well. Of course, February 23rd and 24th, we had our accreditation visit. February 25th, I met with some other stakeholders in Cochise County for the Rural Health Transformation Program meeting to talk about, as the state of Arizona is going to be allocated some significant monies in order to invest in rural health care here within Cochise County. We're talking about where those monies can be best spent. One of those key pieces being education, not only new programming, but also increasing current capacity for programming and upskilling and reskilling. So we're continuing to have conversations about that. February 26th, I attended the TRIO celebration on the Douglas campus and also Black History Month celebration here. March 2nd and 3rd, we had post-HLC celebrations across the district. March 4th, we had our staff budget retreat. March 5th, I presented to the Sky Islands leadership team, just giving an overview of Cochise College, what we do, our impact, those sorts of things. And March 10th, I attended the Good Morning Sierra Vista. Some of the upcoming activities we've got, March 20th through the 24th, I'll be attending, myself and Dr. Brown will be attending the HLC conference in Chicago, March 27th. We've got the President's Student Leadership Academy on the Douglas campus. April 1st, we've got the College Foundation Legacy Society event. And if they don't have that date, we'll make sure that they've got that in case they want to attend. April 10th through 14th, I'll be attending the ACC conference in Seattle, along with the Small and Rural Colleges Commission meeting that I have. April 22nd through the 23rd, we've got myself and board member leader will be attending the ACCT All Trustee meeting in Phoenix, as well as the All AZ Academic Celebration. We'll get a chance to celebrate our students that make the All AZ Academic list. Mr. Chair, members of the board, that concludes my report. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I had one on facilities. How are we doing with the helicopter simulator?
Yes, good question. So I know that Dean Scarborough has been in contact with our counterpart in Canada. He's supposed to get back to us in about 2 weeks. Originally, we had thought that we were going to have it sometime over spring break. Turns out that that's not the case. So we're trying to pin him down on a definitive date when we can have that. Originally, too, we were going to look at putting some additional, I don't know what we call it, some additional pieces on it, which included the, what do you call it, Beth? It's the
stretcher system
for loading into the helicopter. It looks like we're probably going to do that internally ourselves to make sure that we get the right one that'll fit the helicopter. So I'm hoping that at the next board meeting, we'll have the definitive date on when we get the helicopter. And I'll keep you abreast on that. Yes.
Moving along to 1.05.5 was our monthly financial report for February 2026. That was in our packet. Were there any questions on that report or comments? 1.05.6 was monthly academic progress report. That was also in our packet. Was there any questions or comments on that report? Okay, moving on to new business, 2.01 consent agenda. I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
We're moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Do we have introductions this evening?
We do.
Okay.
The two employees appreciate their time to come
and allow themselves to be introduced, and glad to have them here. First, we have Kim Ryan. She's a Dream Builder Facilitator, part of our SBDC department, and she joined us here at Cochise just this month. Started on March 1st, is that right?
2nd.
Yeah, March 2nd. Thank you. Monday, March 2nd. And before she came to Cochise, she worked as a business analyst at Monkey Brain Marketing. So she brings those skills with her to join us in the SBDC department. And when asked about how do you plan to make positive impact at Cochise, she says by working diligently and faithfully to empower all small business owners and operators in her network. Our Dream Builder Facilitator in the SBDC, Kim Ryan. And next is Sorrel Cooper. Sorrel is our testing services specialist. She also started this month in March. She has a bachelor's degree in environmental science from the United States Military Academy. And when asked about how do you plan to make a positive impact here at Cochise, she says, I hope to put a smile on people's faces, even when they are feeling stressed about testing. She enjoys working with horses, and her husband and her two older children are also members of the Cochise family, and our youngest will soon be joining the Cochise family in the fall. We're incredibly happy to be part of the Cochise family. And that's the story of our testing services specialist, Sorrel Cooper. Are there any questions? Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Is a 2026-2027 student tuition. Administration is requesting board adopt a motion to approve the tuition fee schedule for fiscal year 2027. Dr. Perry?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. As part of the college's FY 2026-2027 budget development process, the administration prepares recommendations for the governing board related to tuition and fees. Before we outline the options, I'd like to go over a few budget projections and slides that we provided for you there at the dais themselves. So if you look at should be the revenue projections, which is the second one there. So state aid projections for FY 2027 show some variation across the categories. We're seeing a slight decrease in M&O funding, while equalization funding is projected to increase. Rural aid and STEM workforce funding are expected to decline modestly as well. But overall, I think this reinforces the importance of just careful planning on the part of the college as state funding continues to shift from year to year. And although it's been relatively stable, we want to plan accordingly and be conservative in those estimates that we bring forward. If you move on to the next slide, revenue projections operations, this slide highlights the year-over-year changes in state aid. On the left-hand side, you can see the FY 2026 revenues compared to what we expect for FY 2027. The increase in equalization funding helps offset the decrease in M&O, rural aid, and STEM funding, but not quite entirely. What this does is really creates almost a relatively neutral net impact and emphasizes, again, the need for us to just be careful about how we budget and how we go about new initiatives and things like that. And again, making sure that we're prioritizing going into moving into the FY 2027 budget. The next slide, revenue projections, general fund. So looking at our operational revenues on the left-hand side, we see some overall modest growth. So you've got an increase of $540,700 in state aid unrestricted. We move down, and what we've got listed there is local tax levy, new construction only. So there you're seeing that we have not put an increase to the tax levy. That's just based on new construction. Moving down, you see tuition. There, that is held at $96 a credit hour. And then what we were able to do this year was kind of a budget realignment and reallocation estimates, which allowed us to find some funding internally, a little over $1 million. What that does is that puts kind of our projections or available fund projections there, a little over $2 million. If we move to the right side over there, you can see that what we have listed there is based on our, was it March 4th or March 6th budget retreat? March 4th budget retreat is the preliminary budget that we've developed internally as an institution. And again, taking what we did with the board itself in the work session, bringing over some of that philosophy and then moving that over into our retreat. And what we have here, like I said, that gives us a little over $2 million. On the right is what we see as the budget needed for FY 2027, with most supporting base adjustments to salaries and a portion to one-time adjustments. So what that allows us to do currently is make any baseline adjustments we need to salaries and things like that, yet still fund some of those one-time initiatives, primarily being as we move in the strategic planning process for that next year. And you can see then the total general fund anticipated cost is right there at $2 million, a little over $2 million. So any questions pertaining to that slide? For additional information, as we move to slide 5, across Arizona's community colleges, tuition kind of has been gradually increasing over time, reflecting, you know, both inflationary pressures as well as increasing operational costs. Despite this trend, we've always been really proud of Cochise College really being in that mid-pack, that mid-tier pack. And I think that's a good place for us to be. It puts us there, it allows us to remain competitive, but it also leads towards, you know, one of our core things, which is access to education and making that affordable to our students. So this will be an important part there. You can see that for FY 2027, really the average cost is a little over $100. And then the last slide, slide 6. This slide compares tuition rates across Arizona community colleges. Many are implementing modest increases, while some are holding steady. Again, our tuition rate is under consideration for today's board meeting. We're bringing that forward for board action. As we evaluate, I think, again, it's important that we balance kind of affordability with the need to sustain high quality programs and services, not only now, but for years to come. Okay. So any questions on those slides?
I just had one.
Yes.
It appears from the work that you've done with your budget folks, but there won't be a need to increase tuition this year. We can meet everything we need to do without increasing the tuition.
That is correct. We've given the board three options that we feel comfortable with, understanding that we have built a budget, understanding that any of those three options are acceptable and help move the institution forward. With that, if I may, Mr. Chair, you'll see then in your handouts, you have option one, which is no change in rates for FY 27. So it'd be the current rate that it currently is, which is $96 a credit hour. Option two, a $1 per credit increase from 96 to 97 per credit hour in-state rate. And then option number three, a $2 per credit increase from 96 to 98 per credit hour in-state rate.
We have a motion to approve. Zero.
If you would, Mr. Chair, I'd like, if the board could, to make a recommendation and then pass that recommendation based on whether that is option one, two, or three.
recommend option one.
Yeah, to keep it where it is.
Mm-hmm. Is option one. I just want to make sure I'm.
Yes.
And I agree.
Zero increase.
With zero increase.
Can I have a motion to do so?
So move.
Move and second it to use option one with zero increase to student tuition. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. 2.03 is the 2026-2027 miscellaneous fee schedule and Douglas campus housing and meal plan rates. Dr. Perry?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as part of the college's FY26-27 budget development process, the administration prepares recommendations to the governing board related to tuition and fees. The attached document represents the proposed FY2026-27 miscellaneous fees and housing meal plan rates. Please note that there was an error on page 57 under room rate, under professional pilot 21-week semester. We have adjusted that. We had doubled the amount of the housing. It is corrected now. So what you see in front of you is the correct figure.
Well, actually, the number from above was entered on the wrong line. So
okay.
Yeah.
Very well. It's Stephanie caught that pretty quick, so she was going to have something to say about that one.
After everybody else that looked at it.
Need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us 2.04, Gym Roof Agreement. Administration is requesting the board adopt a motion to accept progressive roofing proposal to replace the Douglas campus gymnasium roof at a price of $1,845,391.69. Will they do this outside monsoon season?
Unfortunately, we'll probably roof in sections.
Okay. The bottom line is, Mr. Chair, that the Douglas gymnasium roof is at the end of its useful life, needs to be repaired. And we've got plans, hopefully over the next series of subsequent years, to do some improvements inside the gymnasium as well. We cannot do those unless we fix the roof first. So we've submitted a proposal for you to review and hopefully approve, and recommending that this can commence in April and we can get that first kind of that first thing done.
Well, I was just thinking of the student union roof.
Yes.
Did we look at a retractable?
Oh, no.
Do you have 25, 50, 30 million to add to it?
Okay, I need a motion to approve the gym roof agreement.
So move.
Second.
Move and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. 2.05, City of Douglas Intergovernmental Agreement, Backup Water Supply.
Yes, Mr. Chair, as the City of Douglas continues the water services project from the property adjacent to the Douglas campus, the City of Douglas is seeking approval of an IGA for the Cochise College Water Well Number 1 to serve as the backup water system or backup water well. Well, they are drilling in support of the new commercial port of entry and future development between Douglas campus and the City of Douglas. So we'll continue to maintain that well. It will be the property of Cochise College, but it will serve as a backup to the well that they are actually drilling.
Very good. Need a motion to approve 2.05.
Moved.
Move and second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. 2.06, Faculty Emeritus. Dr. Perry?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Eric Lodge and Mary Cole have been nominated for Faculty Emeritus status. Per College Policy 3023, procedure, policy procedure 3023, Emeritus faculty. This nomination has been approved by the nominating committee and recommended by the interim vice president for academics. I received concurrence from each nominee, and it is now my recommendation as president that the governing board confers such designation on Eric Lodge and Mary Coyle based on meritorious service to the college.
Pleasure to help do so. Need a motion to approve 2.06.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to 3.01, communications, Dr. Perry.
I'm getting lots of time here tonight.
You are.
So I received an email from Lynn Tinchner-Ladner, a Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society president, informing us that Phi Theta Kappa chapter at Cochise College, Sierra Vista campus, has been named a 2025 REACH chapter and will receive Phi Theta Kappa graduation stoles to be worn by chapter officers and members during graduation and to keep in celebration of their college completion milestone. Phi Theta Kappa's REACH rewards program recognizes and rewards Phi Theta Kappa chapters that excel in membership development. In addition, we received recognition by NASPA, the Student Affairs Administrators in Higher Education, for its commitment to nonpartisan student voter engagement. And then lastly, it's not in your packet. We just received it, I think, this morning or yesterday, was that we received a proclamation from the governor's office proclaiming April 2026 as Arizona Community College Month. So we're extremely excited about the fact that we've got supporters in throughout all of the offices up at the state capitol and here locally as well, supporting what we do. And with that, that's all of our communications.
02, Math and Science Division report. Dr. Guslov?
Got that right, Dr. Governor Hodgins. Thank you for that. As you can tell, I probably have a little head cold, so hopefully I won't suffer too much with this. But as you mentioned, my name is Thomas Kessel. Thank you, Dr. Perry, Dr. Brown, Dr. Davis, Dr. Allen, colleagues, Colin. Colin and I have some, we're friends, we just joke. And I just clicked this thing, right? So what I'm going to be talking about is probably a good topic today, since you're talking about all these numbers, is talk about math. So a lot of good things are happening at the school. And I have a coin saying on LinkedIn, great things are happening at Cochise College, and I really mean it. So what we've been focusing on is student success rates. So what we've been worrying about is our STEM pathways. These are the ones that where you go into calculus. And these were pre-med, engineers, chemists, scientists, all those types of fields need. And we've been noticing our student success rates, even though, like we mentioned, are at national levels, we just think we need to improve them. If you remember Complete College America, in that area, when you have a barrier, when you have 60% of your students pass, 40% aren't, and they're not getting through. So the better we get this success rate, the better. So one thing we've been noticing, each one of these classes going into calculus, strong mastery level will not always guarantee success, but it is essential for success. I don't think I need to tell anybody, but math is a building subject matter. What you learn in Math 151 is expected to be known in Calc 1 and things like that. So what we have been observing, the faculty have been really in tune on this. They've noticed when a student gets a C, let's say in Math 151, doesn't guarantee them passing Math 182. Or same thing for Math 182, they get a C in the course. It doesn't represent in the past, you have a decent mastery of the level. And I think there's a lot of things going on there, but I just personally think you have two types of students You have students that want to master the material, and sometimes students are time crunched and just worrying about doing well on the exam. The problem is when they get, let's say, a 70% on the exam, they don't really have time to go back and figure out what they did wrong. So we think those type of things will help. Don't need to lecture anybody here about the national readiness in math. As you know, it's going down, then going up. We're a community college, as the Cochise College does, and we have a good plan to improve these student success rates. So this is what I really want to spend most of my time on, this slide. So the classes that we're going to be talking about here is Math 091, 151, 182, 220, and Math 081 is more of a pilot. But what we're doing is doing a what we call a skills gap test. In the first week, we're giving each student a test. And then from that test, hopefully the student gets a informed decision. Maybe they need to step back in a class. Maybe they're in the right class, or maybe they need to move up. Usually it's down or stay in place. And we've been finding that's been relatively successful. What's new and unique now is the math faculty came up with this, and there's other institutions doing very similar things here. Dr. Allen, I want to thank you for your math tutoring team also involved in this with helping these students. So what will happen if a student gets under a 75, even on the skills assessment exam, they go over all the problems they got wrong, and they figure out what they need to do to get it right. So now we have a mastery improvement. And then the next exam, we don't want to let them off the hook. We make sure they know the material going into the exam, have a nice little prep review one-on-one. This could either be with the tutor or with the instructor, as you can tell, it's in person or via Zoom or is it Meets? Oh, I always say Meets. I'm sorry, Teams. Thank you, Wendy. And that's going really well. Knock on wood, which is plastic, 8+ weeks. I haven't had one student complain about this, because I think they see value in it. They see this, the faculty member or the tutor helping them, and they're improving. And I'm assuming the success rates will go up. And so I'm really optimistic. Problem is, this is the first semester we're doing it, so I don't have any data on this particular thing. I just think going back to those old techniques, what did you do wrong, figuring out, mastering it, I think it's a good approach. What we have been doing in some other classes is what we call the L sections. And we've been sending them to the tutoring center. The 132, 142, and 151 L's, respectfully, they spend 1 hour in the tutoring center, and the instructor goes with them, or the instructor stays within the class. But the whole point was those students get acquainted with those tutors, and they actually get a relationship, and they stay longer. We're finding that on both campuses. We're seeing great success there. Dr. Brown and I have been talking. We've been seeing anecdotally about 7% increase. And this is the first year we've done it on both campuses. Keep in mind, this is very student dependent. If a student has drive, they're going to do quite well, and things like that. Some data I just wanted to mention that's in your packet. I know you guys love numbers off the fly, but I'll just talk about 151, for example. Students that took that skills assessment test, 93% didn't pass or got under a 75%. But at the end of the semester, 43% passed. 43% did not pass, got D and Fs. But the point is, look at that percentage that did pass. Same thing with 151, 65% did not pass that rate, but 35% had a DFW rate of 35%. So you can see there is some success there, because I think the student was informed that they needed to do some extra work, go to the tutoring center and things like that. So just in conclusion, we still are using the direct self-placement. For those who are not aware, they see various videos and they see different lectures, and then the student can determine which class will work for them, which is great. But the problem is, if it has to be a good faith effort. If the student's like, I'll figure it out, maybe that's when they need to go a step back. We used to have a plan, and we still are thinking about it, where all of our classes and the math 091, 151, and 182, respectively, all we had three of those classes on both campuses at the same time. Worked easier in Sierra Vista. Problem is, Douglas, class availability. I know we're adding classes, so maybe that's not going to be as much a concern. So as of now, it's more on the student. We're working with the student. I think the direct self-placement with these extra safeguards, I think are at least worth looking at a little bit longer. So we just continually will evaluate that. With that, any comments and questions?
I just want to commend you. I have personal experience with this. My dad took an interest in making sure I excelled in high school, whereas he did not. He called my calculus teacher within a few weeks of the semester beginning. And if he hadn't, I would have failed the class. And instead, I got just a couple of one-on-one tutoring sessions, and I excelled. And it does make all the difference in the world. So
absolutely,
it's great.
And we're actually, I brought in one of the dean's meetings, a mentoring program where our faculty can actually interact with students that are in the majors and help them when they're having these struggles.
So do they follow up with them as the semester progresses? Or
yes. Okay. So yes, they do. And I think what happens is when they have those relationships, I've been told by a couple faculty members, they are still interacting with them. They're coming to the office hours now, believe it or not. That's, yeah. Well, what, as a chemist, PhD chemist, what happens is, my daughter's told me this too, and I keep my, you know, ear to the ground a little bit. They, students don't want to feel like they're not doing underperforming. Don't want to be called dumb. I'm sorry for using that term, but and they have a self-esteem where they don't want to go into that office. But when the faculty member is now working on that task, like, hey, and now we're trying to do more of an encouragement techniques. My faculty are doing a great job. And so Dr. Allen's tutoring center, they're going there all the time.
Yeah. So prior to this, did you feel there was maybe stigma's too strong of a term, but was there, you know, that resistance by the students that they could be labeled, whereas, you know, there being some level of automatic exposure with a tutor now, they're more likely to do it without.
I would probably say for some, yes. I think some is just time management. I'll figure it out. You know, I'll watch it during the football game or baseball game. I'll just figure it out. That's where I was going back to. I study just for the test. I'll, you know, cram and I'll do well. But then the problem is when you don't go back and have that mastery type of techniques, and go back and understand that it's a building class. Like, for example, when I teach chemistry, people tell me I don't need to know the periodic table anymore. I'm like, oh, yes, you do. You know, they don't realize how important, and this assumes you know it, if that makes sense. But yes, I think there is a lot of those combinations are going on. I think every student's different and unique. I sense some generalities, but the scores are, I think, more towards that, what I've been saying, but I can't say absolute.
Yeah, no, I second what Stephanie said. Is like, this is wonderful. Keep pushing with that. That is great.
And the next future thing is online. I didn't talk about online. Our pass rates are not as good online. It's right now, but what happens is the student has to watch all the lectures on their own time. And then you could just slowly watch the students' grades when you look at the data. We have some ideas, and actually have a math department meeting in 2 weeks, and that was one of our top priorities to figure that out.
So, Thomas.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so this is great. I think there's a couple of things. One is it's okay to be intrusive, especially with students. We're there to help them, right? We want to see them be successful. In many cases, when a student comes in, and I've often said this to math teachers, not liking math or hating math is a learned response.
Yes.
It really is, right? So they've had some experience where they didn't get it right, so they don't like math. So this is kind of one of those first steps when they come to us, is evaluating where they're at so that we can help them, you know, progress up. The other piece to this, though, and online makes sense as well, is I think we've got to work closer with our K-12 partners, because the fact of the matter is they're coming to us less prepared than they have been in years past. So how do we bridge that gap so that they feel more comfortable and confident once they come to us? And because it's easy, and this when I taught at the high school level, community college would always say that the high school can't do it. They're sending us this. There's this blame game, right? And really what we need to do is work closer together for that seamless pathway to help those students all the way through.
Totally agree.
Talking about that since I've been on the board, that they're not, and I haven't seen a lot of progress. Has there been that I didn't?
So I think the K-12 districts realize it. I think how we go about telling them and providing the data is as important as the data as well. Nobody wants to be told you're not doing a good job. Okay. And I'm not saying they're not doing a good job. I'm saying there's probably other things we need to look at that can help their students be more successful. And we can be a part of that. Because as we look at the educational ecosystem within Cochise County, we're a partner. Again, we can't do it alone. We get a lot of students that transfer from Buena and Tombstone, these other things. So I think when we look at the next strategic plan and we look at student success initiatives and things that we could possibly do, I think there'll be time to hone in a little bit more on maybe some partnerships that we have that are working or trying some things that can better create that seamless pathway that can help those students be successful. Because it's mainly in reading and math. And math is where we see the biggest kind of...
Yeah, between COVID and K-12 funding, neither one helps with what we're trying to do. So it's kind of it's a COVID. Wicked problem.
I can just tell you anecdotally, and all my faculty have told me it's the math word problems is the killer, because the students can't comprehend what's in that paragraph. And then once you show them, this is what I wanted you to do. Oh, I can do the math. But getting to that point to do the math, that's the biggest hurdle that I've noticed in chemistry and with the other math instructors. So I have taught some chemistry classes there.
To David's point, we have had this discussion for quite a number of years, and I think we have made headway into the K-12. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you that their scores have improved, but your assessments are definitely crucial to these kids surviving. You're taking kids that are just barely treading water, mm-hmm. and that's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're seeing. You pull them aside, get a little relationship, and you're changing that person's life
by
doing this. So it's your work is definitely appreciated. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Anything else?
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Gibbs. Academic Affairs Report. Janelle?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Dr. Perry, and guests, I'm really excited to be here today to share all the good work that's happening in academic affairs. Academic affairs remains focused on advancing institutional excellence through coordinated leadership in curriculum, assessment, instructional design, learning technologies, institutional research, and grants development. Across all units, our work strengthens academic quality, ensures regulatory compliance, and supports long-term institutional sustainability. We had quite a few personnel changes this year, but I feel like we're in a really good spot. I have a great team that really believes in our mission. We've had an exciting year with a lot of accomplishments. First, I want to thank my team for all of their effort and work in the HLC visit. We had people on the writing team, the editing team, the evidence collection team, and many who spoke at the sessions. And so I'm really proud of the preparation and all the work that they did throughout that process. Some other highlights this year include refining assessment and program review processes and seeing faculty really engage in the process and implement some really great data quality improvement projects. We had over 500 curriculum changes approved this year to align with the statewide AJEC changes and to have program improvements. We hired our first educational technologist who has already implemented an EdTech SharePoint site and redesigned a syllabus template. Institutional research has continued to expand dashboards, including our first public-facing dashboards on the IR page on the Cochise website. And all while doing internal data requests and ensuring timely completion of all of our compliance reporting, which, as you know, continues to grow. Dr. Ashby, our instructional designer, was selected as an HLC peer reviewer. We successfully completed a large Moodle upgrade with minimal disruption to instruction. And last but certainly not least, we were awarded a $1.8 million fund for the improvement of post-secondary education grant through a highly competitive process from the Department of Education. This four-year award will position Cochise College as a leader in responsible AI integration. Our work is organized into four coordinated initiatives. At the center of that is the AI Innovation Studio, which will be a research and development hub where faculty will receive training and resources to create AI integrated curriculum. The studio will provide hands-on faculty workshops on responsible use, bias detection, misinformation, and AI literacy. It will also support assignment redesign using a foundational versus scalable skills framework, ensuring that we're preserving core learning while also teaching students how to use AI responsibly. It will also develop a plug-and-play AI module covering topics such as hallucinations, data privacy, algorithmic bias, and multilingual accessibility. Innovation can only succeed if it's broad and ethical, so we will also be building in AI capacity institution-wide efforts. Staff will receive role-specific AI training to streamline workflows, enhance planning tools, and increase time available for direct student support. By embedding AI capacity across the institution, we strengthen every point in the student lifecycle. As you know, Cochise County's ecosystem is tightly connected with K-12 districts, the college, and regional employers. So rather than designing AI curriculum in isolation, we want to establish a formal K-2 industry task force to co-develop a locally relevant AI proficiency framework. This task force will define developmentally appropriate AI benchmarks from elementary to task force and incorporate employer-identified skills. Students entering Cochise College will already understand responsible AI use, and employers will receive graduates prepared to apply AI to real workplace challenges. Finally, we will develop stackable workforce micro-credentials aligned with high-value, scalable skills, which are skills enhanced by AI rather than being replaced by them. These credentials will validate students' abilities to apply AI to workforce automation, structured communication, data-supported decision-making, and problem-solving. Aligned with the Arizona Learning Mobility Collaborative, these digital badges will be portable, stackable, and applicable towards degree and employer advancement pathways. This ensures access not only for traditional students, but also for our adult learners, incumbent workers, and community members. And while working on these four initiatives, we will also be creating a AI rural playbook, which will make our resources and developed materials open source so that other rural institutions can utilize our training, curriculum, and processes to improve AI use in their own institutions. Work is early in these initiatives, but I look forward to updating you on our grant work as implementation progresses and measurable outcomes emerge. And with that, I'm happy to answer any of your questions.
Just out of curiosity, has Arizona gotten very far in terms of coming up with those K-12 AI benchmarks you mentioned?
Yeah, thank you. So that is something we're going to focus on locally because I don't think there has been a statewide effort. And so we're going to really hit that in Cochise County and bring in our K-12 partners and our industry partners and try to build out what that looks like so that everyone is on the same page and we can make sure that at all levels students are prepared.
That's excellent.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Note, she's also been asked to present at the all-trustee meeting in April as well. So Janelle will be joining us up there.
Yeah.
Brings us to number four, comments from governing board members.
Okay.
Once again, I'm impressed, you know, of the things that we're doing and the things that we are headed toward. I think that, you know, when we don't stop, when the state doesn't give us the answers, we just go make our own path and do the right thing and then share it with others. And I think that's one of the things I admire about this college is that we just go forward and do the right thing for our students and for the other people that we collaborate with. So congratulations to all of you. I'm just really impressed with you. Thank you.
Yeah. So just from my perspective, the HLC visit, that had to be a gigantic heavy lift. And, you know, Cochise College, again, you know, it sounded to me like we knocked it out of the park. Everybody should be just incredibly proud. You know, we've hit that high standard. Cochise College continually seems to hit and get recognized. I think HLC has it slightly wrong if they didn't say we're the best community college in the universe. But again, just my opinion. And along those lines, also a thank you. When we did our trustee interview during that HLC visit, that packet, Dr. Brown and whoever else was involved in prepping us for that, I thought that packet was absolutely perfect. So, you know, let's keep going. Outstanding work.
To take along with what Steve said, I would just like to thank Dr. Brown and everybody else involved with the HLC visit. It was a heavy lift. It was a big deal. There's been a lot of folks in Chicago that work on this year round. And you all did outstanding. So thank you. Kudos to everybody at Cochise. With that, this meeting is adjourned.